Yeah, thank you.
There you go. That's a lot louder. In a world of fatigue, don't give up. There we go. Off to a good start. Turn your Bibles to Luke chapter 9, verse 23. And we'll begin there. Luke 9, verse 23. And Jesus said to all, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." There are a few times in Jesus' ministry where he'll be very honest on what the Christian life is really like, the kind of struggles that we have to bear. And here he's very honest. He says, if you really want to follow me, if you really want to be my disciple, you have to pick up your cross. And daily, each day, you have to make the choice to follow me. To them, I imagine this was probably a very startling statement. When they looked at a cross, they saw no victory over death. And at this time, Jesus really hadn't been talking to his disciples very much on the events surrounding his death and what was going to happen. Very soon, he is going to begin to tell them as he's heading towards Jerusalem what's going to happen to him as he's trying to prepare them for this very difficult time. But this is a burden that not only his disciples, but we all have to bear if we want to follow Jesus. And the Christian life is not something that's easy. We know that. We encounter many different trials and things that can easily discourage us. But Jesus gives us hope to not give up. I want to talk about Jesus' encouragement real quick before we get into the story of Mark chapter 9, Luke chapter 9. Right before Jesus he casts out this demon from this child. He goes up to a mountain, and he is transfigured before the disciples there. And if you look in Luke's account, Luke has something that the other gospel accounts don't have, starting in verse 30 and 31. It says, "Behold, two men were talking with Jesus, Moses and Elijah, who appeared in glory and spoke of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem." I think this is really interesting and something that needs to be pointed out. As Jesus goes up to the mountain, he's in the presence of his Father, and oftentimes he would go to the mountain to get some peace, to be alone with God, to be in his presence and receive strength and encouragement. At this time, you know, he's transfigured before them. His clothes become whiter than anything that's ever been washed before. And the disciples are amazed to see Moses and Elijah there. And why is it that Moses and Elijah are there? It's kind of the interesting question of all this. But what they talk with him about is interesting. It says that they were speaking to him about his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. They were speaking to Jesus about the events surrounding his death. Jesus was about to face the hardest trial that he had ever faced as a person before. He was about to die. He was about to die alone. He was about to die a death of shame. And he was going to suffer tremendously. And he knew this. How could you go about your daily tasks when you know that your death is coming soon and it's going to be a death of so much suffering? And I think God sends Moses and Elijah because they are also not unfamiliar with suffering of different kinds. Moses and Elijah were two prophets who faltered at times and had their moments where I'm sure that they wanted to give up, where it was too much, but ultimately they didn't. And I think it's amazing what God does here by sending those two prophets to minister to Jesus and to give him hope and courage about what's to come and what yet awaits. You know, Moses was The people of Israel rebelled against him at multiple times, tried to set up new leaders, tried to kill him, but God always defended him, and God gave him strength. Elijah, who did amazing things for God, did many signs like Jesus. He had a queen in Israel that kept him up at night, that he feared, that he ran away from. And both of these characters have these amazing highs and lows in their life, and they're no different than us. In life, we have these mountaintop experiences that we call them, and then we have our low points. And Jesus said the Mount of Transfiguration has had his high point. He's just been energized by Moses and Elijah. He's been in the presence of God, and God has glorified him in front of his disciples and said, hey, listen to him. He knows what he's doing. But just like us, when we have these spiritual high moments on this mountain place of spirituality, it seems that bad always follows. And life just goes in a constant flow of seeking those spiritual highs and then being met with reality from time to time, being met with trials that we face. And as soon as Jesus gets off this mountain, I'll have you now turn to Mark chapter 9, and we'll read. As soon as Jesus has this spiritual high moment, look at what he encounters as soon as he is coming down from the mountain. Verse 14. When Jesus and the other three disciples came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd around them, and scribes were arguing with them. And immediately all the crowd, when they saw him, were greatly amazed and ran up to him and greeted him. And he asked them, what are you arguing about with them? And someone from the crowd answered him, teacher, I brought my son to you, for he has a spirit that makes him mute. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast it out, but they were not able. Then he answered them, O faithless generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him to me. They brought the boy to him. When the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy, and he fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked his father, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood, has often cast him into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. And Jesus said to him, if you can, all things are possible for one who believes. Immediately the father of the child cried out and said, I believe, help my unbelief. When Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, you mute and deaf spirit, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again. After crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out, the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, he is dead. But Jesus took him by the hand, lifted him up, and he arose. We had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, why could we not cast it out? And he said to them, this kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer. As soon as Jesus comes down from the mountain, he doesn't have even a moment of peace. The crowds have surrounded his disciples, and there is some kind of scene going on. And the scribes are arguing with his disciples about something. We're not really sure what exactly it is. We can assume it's probably because his disciples had failed to heal this demon. So the scribes are probably giving them grief. That's what I assume is happening. And so Jesus asks them what's happening, and a father speaks up. And it's amazing to me that when Jesus he's just come from this spiritual high moment and he's been in the presence of God, that he's immediately faced with a demon, with the exact opposite, with people arguing and bickering. And he's faced with a lack of faith. And in our life, we look back at those high points in our life, and we go out chasing them. We want to find it. We want to reach our next spiritual high point. But maybe life's not meant to be lived in the mountains, but life's meant to be in the valleys. After all, you know, Jesus, he didn't live his life away from people all the time. He wasn't a hermit. He went out into the world where there was trouble. He chased after suffering so that he could bring healing. Maybe life's not meant to be lived in those mountains, but in the valleys. But the mountain, those mountain experiences that we have, they help encourage us for what we are going to face in the valley. And Jesus has a lot that he's going to face here. And there's four characters that I want to bring out in this story. And there's four different types of people that are going through suffering, and it's affecting them differently in their faith. It's affecting their endurance differently. And so I want to bring out those four characters and see what kind of message we can get from them. First of all, there is the demon-possessed child. And this is troubling in a lot of ways, because there's no other, of all the demon possession stories we have in the gospel, which there are many, you don't find stories of a child being possessed. So our first instinct is when we encounter a demon in the gospel, we assume that this person has lived a very wicked life and therefore they are deserving of this suffering in some way. And so the people, you know, cast them out. But this is a child. I mean, did this child do anything? Was it some 13-year-old who talked back to his mom? No, I don't think so. This is just plain suffering. We don't really know how or why this happened. And it's interesting that it's just the father. Where is the mother? And he's been suffering from this for a while. I would say this stage of faith is just complete faith failure. And I'm using the child as an example, not to say that his faith failed, but he is at a point where he's been afflicted for years by this suffering, and he has complete absence of control. You look at the first demon possession story in the Gospel of Mark, a demon runs to Jesus, a man possessed by a demon. And a lot of times that's how it happens. Is that the demons come towards Jesus, they acknowledge who he is, Jesus casts the demon out, the person's restored. Or you have the case of Legion, where Jesus actually goes out seeking for Legion. They see each other, and then Legion comes to Jesus and bows down. The demon in this child is not like that at all. The child has to be carried and dragged by the father. He's completely hopeless. He's not going to go to Jesus and be healed. He has complete absence of control. This stage of faith is that he's completely reliant on others for healing. We are all completely reliant on Jesus, but he specifically needed the love of his father. He needed someone in his life who would not give up on him and to bring him to Jesus. And there are people in our world like that, that they're just not going to come into a church one day seeking for answers. It just won't happen. There are some people out there that we have to go and find them. We have to bring them to Jesus. There are people like that that exist, and it's in the case of this child. He is completely out of control. This demon has completely taken over. He's completely reliant on other people for his healing. That's the stage of faith that, or the situation that you don't want to be in yourself. But it is a real one. Let's talk about the father for a minute, because he's probably one of the most interesting. I would say the father is at the edge of his faith. When Jesus sees what's happening to this child, he asks him, "How long has this been going on?" And he says, basically, as long as I can remember, since he was a young child. And so you can imagine how long he has been dealing with this as a family. This man's been worn down by the suffering of his son over the course of who knows how long. What would that do to your faith? And this man has a small faith. He doesn't have no faith. That's what we find out. But you can just imagine being in his shoes. You're dragging him. He hears that the disciples are in town. He drags his son to his disciples, and he finds 9 of the disciples. And there's just, you can sense his hope being built up at that moment. These disciples, they cast out other demons before. They were experienced. They knew what to do when they encountered a demon. They had not failed before. And the crowd surround the disciples to see this great miracle that's going to take place, of this child being delivered, and nothing happens. one of the last few hopes he had to relieve the suffering of his son, to have his life turn around. It didn't work. Imagine that feeling. It had worked for other people, but it hadn't worked for you and your child. But Jesus comes down the mountain, and his hope is restored a little bit, because this is the last person who can help him, is Jesus himself. And so this man speaks out to Jesus, and what he says is, you can tell that this man has been beaten to the point of almost giving up. He says to him, "If you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us." You ever been to that point in your life, been in your prayer life, where you start praying to God, "God, if you can do this for me." I know I've used that phrase many times. "God, if you can, take this burden away. Do this or that." And Jesus responds to him, "If you can." He says, "All things are possible to those who believe and have faith." But you can see how worn down he is. He says, "Jesus, I believe, but help me with my unbelief. Help me with my doubts." This man has endured a lot, but he is at the edge of giving up. Jesus is his last hope. It's another stage of endurance. Next one is the disciples. And we're going to Matthew's gospel real quick. This also takes place in Matthew chapter 17. This one has a slightly different ending. If you go to Matthew chapter 17 and you start in, let's start in verse 18. "Jesus rebuked the demon and it came out of him. The boy was healed instantly. Then the disciples came to Jesus privately and said, 'Why could we not cast it out?' He said to them, 'Because of your little faith, for truly I say to you, if you have faith like a grain of mustard seed, you'll say to this mountain, move from here to there and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you.'" Same thing happens back in Mark chapter 9, verse 28. "When he had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, 'Why could we not cast it out?' And he said to them, 'This kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer.'" So let's kind of link these two things together. The disciples have what Jesus calls is little faith. They ask him why we couldn't cast this demon out. He said, "Your faith is little." But he almost, in a way, he almost contradicts that by what he says next. He says, "If your faith is the size of a mustard seed, you'll be able to speak to this mountain, move, and it will move. You'll be able to overcome amazing things if you have faith the size of a mustard seed." A mustard seed is next to nothing in size. And we know the disciples don't have no faith. Is he really saying that their faith is even smaller than that? And I don't think he's saying that at all. I think what Jesus is saying to them is the disciples had outgrown their faith. There are some trials that we will face, and our faith may not be strong enough to overcome them. And that's what the disciples are faced with. Is before this, they were casting out demons and they were declaring that the kingdom of God was here, and everything was fine and dandy and things were going great, and now they were faced with trouble, a trial, and they could not overcome it. Jesus said, "Your faith is too small for this trial." And what else he says to him in Mark is interesting. He says, "This kind can only be driven out by anything but prayer." You know, if I was asked, you know, if someone called me, like, "Jared, you know, on Monday morning, well, we got someone here, pretty sure they're possessed by a demon. Can you come out and, you know, cast this demon out?" As much as I've always wanted to do something like that, because I think that would just be the coolest thing ever, if it was possible, I would have no idea what to do. Neither would any of you. How on earth do you go about casting out a demon? But I think we all would know what to do, at least step one. God, what on earth do I do in this situation? I'm completely out of my comfort zone. I'm powerless in this situation. It's like the disciples were doing these things without a real relationship with God that they were building. And that's really interesting. They were casting out these demons, but they weren't praying to God for the strength to overcome these trials. But you would think that would be their first source that they go to. But their faith was too small. And so sometimes when trials come, our faith is not big enough to overcome it, and we have to go back to our source of strength and power in the first place, and that's Christ, and start with that relationship. And so the disciples, with their little faith, they feel useless. They're being shamed by these scribes and this crowd who, you know, see them as frauds. They're not able to do this. And they feel terrible. You can imagine how terrible they feel about themselves after failing to strengthen others. There's one last character that is also going through it, and that's, of course, Jesus himself. And I've labeled his faith the lonely faith. Listen to the first thing that Jesus says. Jesus gets very emotional in this story, and Matthew and Mark and Luke and all the accounts, he says the same thing. He says, "O faithless generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you?" Does that sound like somebody who's like, is that what someone says right before they give up? How long am I going to have to do this? How long am I going to have to bear these burdens? And hearing Jesus say that hurts. It hurts me. I can imagine what it hurt to hear for the disciples to hear that come out of Jesus' mouth. But notice what Jesus does. If Jesus gives up in this moment, there is no healing for anyone. But notice what Jesus does. He's frustrated and he's discouraged by this pain all around him. But although this burden is great, and this one thing that's happened in the life of this child has caused a lot of pain to a lot of people, although the burden is great, his will to love and to serve others is greater. It's greater than the burden. And so Jesus heals him. And then with that healing, a lot of things happen. It wasn't just the child that was healed. The reason we don't give up, and what we can learn from this story, is first of all, is that God is able. When you pray this week, if you find yourself saying, using that word "if" a lot in your prayers to God, remember this story. First of all, God is able. Yes, we don't know if He will or not, but He is able to answer our prayers. We don't need to come to God with a lot of ifs. We need to be real with Him in our prayers. God is able to bring healing. Jesus, you know, first, of course, there's the miracle. This person who is helpless, who's hopeless, maybe one of the a person who's so far gone, not a lot of people believe that this child can be saved. Maybe not even the disciples at one point. But Jesus is able to restore this person who's completely hopeless and completely lost. And through that, he gives the father, who's on the edge of his faith, balance. Mike led that song, "Jesus, You're My Firm Foundation. I know I can stand secure." This father has had so much weight that he has been bearing. The burden has been too great. He's been living through all of this doubt And he's just been holding on whatever hope he can find. And when he finally finds Jesus, the burden is lifted. Can you imagine that? The weight of that being lifted off you. Your hope's restored. You have new life. You can have a relationship with your son again. And this was all given back to him. What did that do for his faith? What did that do for all of the doubts that he was struggling with? He asked Jesus to help him with his unbelief. And Jesus overwhelmingly answered that request. And I think we need to issue that same prayer in our own lives. Lord, help me with my unbelief and see the transformation that happens. But also his disciples, they grow a lot from this experience too. They learn a lesson about having a relationship with God. It's not about just going out and doing good works for Jesus and God, but not really having a relationship with him. Now when they go out and they heal somebody, they know who their source of strength really comes from. It comes from God. Our source of strength comes from God. We have to stop doing things in our life without the power of God. And so they grow in their faith as well. And we can see that growth as we go through the book of Acts. But also Jesus, of course, is able to witness all of this. We see Jesus that looks almost like a breaking point. He's very vulnerable. How long am I going to have to bear these burdens? How long am I going to have to be with you? But his love for the person and his will to do good, he healed that person. And all of this transformation, all of these burdens are lifted in a moment. The Father's no longer suffering. The Son's no longer suffering. The disciples are learning and growing. And people believe because in him because of what happened. But Jesus is reminded that he's not alone. And that he'll be able to bear this burden that is still yet to come. Lastly, I wanted to end with John 16, verse 20 through 22. When the time is getting even closer for Jesus to die, and he is meeting privately with his disciples, and they're celebrating the Passover, he says to them this, after speaking about his death, he said, "Truly, truly, I say to you, you will weep and lament, and the world will rejoice. You will be sorrowful, but your sorrow will turn into joy. When a woman is giving birth, she has sorrow because her hour has come. But when she has delivered the baby, she has no longer remembers the anguish. For joy that a human being has been born into the world. So also you have sorrow now, but I will see you again. Your hearts will rejoice. No one will take your joy from you." When Jesus died, it shattered the disciples' faith. It shattered their world. They didn't feel like they could have balance. They questioned everything. And they thought what happened when, you know, they couldn't cast out this demon was bad. When Jesus died, it was way worse. Thomas almost abandons his faith entirely. They all betray him. They all experience shame. But then in 3 days, the suffering's over. They see Jesus. They see his face. They touch him. They have conversation with him again. And everything comes into perspective. Their hope is restored. They have a joy now that can't be taken away from them. And we have the same joy that can't be taken away from us. No matter what trial we may face, no matter how hard, we need you. We need each other. And we have to continue to love and do good like Jesus did so that we can bring healing to the world, but we can also bring healing to us. And no matter how many mountaintops you have left in your life and how many valleys that you're going to go through, at the end of it all, we'll see Christ. and he'll take us up with him, not to a mountain, but to heaven itself. And we'll be restored. Look forward to this. Remember, you have a joy that can't be taken away from you. Yeah, there will be times that you will be sorrowful, but that sorrow will be turned into rejoicing. If you have a need this morning, if your endurance lately has really been tested, you don't know how much longer you can hold on, we're here for you. We love you. We want to bring healing to you if you need prayers. If you need to be in a relationship with Christ today, if you need to be baptized, because in Christ, that's the only hope that you have. Make that decision today as we come forward and as we stand and as we sing.